Morning, ladies and gentlemen. Our first case for argument is United States versus Burton. Mr. Sonnenschein.
Good morning, Your Honors. I represent the appellant, Troy Burton. This is a Fourth Amendment case. And there are two points that I'd like to emphasize this morning. First, the initial encounter between the police officers and Mr. Burton implicated the Fourth Amendment because it constituted an investigatory stop. Second, this investigatory stop was not justified because it was not supported by reasonable suspicion that Mr. Burton was engaged in unlawful activity at the inception of the encounter.
Mr. Sonnenschein, let me just start you right out and ask you if Mr. Burton hasn't forfeited the seizure issue. It doesn't appear that he ever argued below that the officers boxed him in illegally by surrounding his car with the bicycles. So that's a problem.
Well, Your Honor, first of all, the government did not argue waiver in their brief. And secondly, under this court's decision in Johnson versus Zima Systems, a litigant who objects to a magistrate's findings of fact and recommendation is only required to articulate the basis of the decision or the particular finding, but not to provide the legal basis or to provide the factual legal basis for that determination.
Well, let me ask you this then. Do we have an adequate evidentiary record as to the circumstances under which the officers approached the car? I mean, for example, is it clear that the officers approached the car from both the front and the rear and kept themselves on their bike stationed there? Do we have that,
Your Honor? In all candor, the record
that's a good thing
was not. The record could have been more clearly developed in this case, but the record, I believe, is clear that at the very outset of this encounter, the three officers simultaneously surrounded the vehicle. Officer Lopez came from the front of the vehicle. One of the officers came from the passenger side. The other officer came from the driver's side. Furthermore, if Your Honor looks at Officer Lopez's trial testimony, his trial testimony indicates that he came from the front of the vehicle to prevent the car from moving. His trial testimony also clarifies that at the very outset of this encounter, the officers surrounded the vehicle on three sides.
But this is surely a minimal stop, isn't it? It's not like being, you know, stopped and frisked and so on the street. So wasn't there enough suspicion to justify such a limited stop?
Your Honor, I don't believe that that provides a principal basis for the outcome in this case. And I would point this court, for example, to...
Well, why? Because Terry is an example of where the less intrusive the stop, the less reason the police have to demonstrate for the stop. Right, we know police can just stop you on the street to ask you a question, right? They don't need suspicion or anything else for that. It's a minimal interference, so minimal grounds are required. So as the stop moves up toward a full arrest, you require, you know, ultimately probable cause. But this seems to me less intrusive than the average Terry stop.
Well, Your Honor,
some bicycles appear, so you can't drive for 2 minutes or something. What's the big deal?
Well, Your Honor, I would not characterize this as a minimal intrusion. Mr. Burton was seated in his vehicle, and he had three police officers surround his vehicle and detain him. And under this court's decision, for example, in United States versus Packer,
Would you rather be in that situation or have police come up to you and frisk you?
I don't think I would have a preference.
Really? I don't believe you.
Your Honor, I would not want to be in my vehicle and have
police... You don't want to have a policeman handling you.
Well,
physically.
Well, Your Honor,
when people are driving, they're constantly being interrupted in their forward motion. Traffic lights, traffic jams, this and that. This fellow, what was his name, Johnson or whoever, is leaning through the window. He's stopping traffic, right? So that kind of interruption is continuous. No big deal.
Okay. I would point this court to its decisions in cases like United States.
I think it's a question of decisions. I think it's a question of common sense.
And I think, under common sense, if a person is seated in their vehicle and three officers come up and surround their vehicle, that would prevent them, a reasonable person in that situation would not...
Go ahead. I'm sorry. No, you finish.
A reasonable person in that situation would not feel free to terminate the encounter by driving away.
Oh, that's true, sure.
And for that reason...
But, of course, if you're stopped by a traffic light, you don't feel free to terminate the stop by driving through the light.
Well, that is true, Your Honor, but police officers are required to justify...
I know. The question is, how much justification is required for the very minimum type of stop involved in this case?
Reasonable suspicion, Your Honor.
Why?
Because this constituted an investigation.
But you don't need any suspicion just to stop a person and ask him questions. Why do you jump from zero to reasonable suspicion? Why don't we have an intermediate category of bare suspicion, which they had here because of the, you know, it's a drug house nearby.
Because the Supreme Court has recognized that...
Well, they haven't dealt with this case, have they?
The Supreme Court has not dealt with this case,
right.
No, that is correct.
So what have they recognized?
Well, they have recognized that even minimal intrusions on freedom need to be justified.
No, because we know that you can stop a person and ask him questions. He can go away, but pretty unusual.
Certainly an officer is permitted to approach a person on the street and put questions to that person.
And can he do that without suspicion? Because that's an interruption with your forward mobility.
I'm sorry, I don't understand the question.
If a policeman stops you on the street to ask you questions, that stops you, right? That's a stop.
Right.
So why is it you don't require suspicion for that?
Well, you're in that situation. If a police officer literally stops you and says...
If a police officer goes up to you while you're walking down the street and says, I want to ask you a question, well, what are you going to do? Are you going to tell him to go jump in a lake or what? You're going to stop. Right? So he's stopping
There might be
you.
A...
He's stopping you. Right?
There might be a momentary... there might be
well,
an
it's
instant.
Not momentary. He has to ask you a question, so you have to stop.
Okay.
So you're stopped.
Okay, but what the officer can't do is then detain you, signal to you that you are not free to leave. If in the consensual
Yeah, but be
encounter.
Realistic. If he stops you to ask you questions, you're not... How many people are going to leave? How many people are going to say, oh, I'm not going to answer your questions. I'm late for my appointment, so get lost.
Well, the whole idea in the consensual... Well, there is a certain amount of fiction, I believe,
right,
in the consensual
okay.
in the consensual
Fine.
Inquiry. However, the Supreme Court and other courts have recognized that the individuals actually do have a choice in consensual encounters. They may not realistically make
so
that choice.
So why should the law be built on a fiction? You have a theory of that?
I don't believe that the law should be built on a fiction. And I
so
think
you think those cases are wrong which say policemen can stop people and ask questions without suspicion?
I wouldn't agree with that. What I am
Well,
what,
but you don't want the law built on fictions, and you said this is fiction, and yet you approve of it. I don't understand what you're thinking.
All I am saying, Your Honor, in this case... The officers approached the vehicle, they stopped Mr. Burton, they prevented him from leaving, and they signaled to him by their conduct of surrounding his vehicle that he was not free to leave. He didn't have any choice. Now, there are cases in which maybe a drug agent goes up to someone in a train station and asks them a question. Maybe the person might not feel free to leave in reality, but they do have a choice because they're not surrounded.
Would your argument be any different if it was one bicycle?
Yes, I believe might. Well, it might be. It depends on the facts. And so, for example, if one officer approached the vehicle, just came up from the side of the vehicle and went up to Mr. Burton and said, excuse me, would you mind answering my questions? That would be legitimate. If he had even gone up, perhaps, and said, Your Honors, I see my time.
Finish what you were saying.
Perhaps if the officer goes up and doesn't even ask for his permission, perhaps that would still be legitimate. But in this case, the officers surrounded the vehicle, and by doing that, they conveyed to Mr. Burton and to any reasonable person in that situation that they have exercised their authority.
He could have backed up, right? He was only surrounded on three sides.
Well, he could have backed up, but yeah. As this court has recognized in United States versus Pavelski, a person surrounded on three sides by police officers would not feel free to leave.
We've got a plain error standard here, don't we?
I don't believe we do, because I think that Mr. Burton's objection to the magistrate's determination was sufficient. But if Your Honor were to find that it was not sufficient, then I do believe this would be governed by the plain error standard.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Sonnenschein.
Thank you.
Mr. Koenig?
Good morning. May it please the Court. My name is Jonathan Koenig, and I appear on behalf of the United States. I think Mr. Sonnenschein and I would agree that if an unlawful seizure occurred in this case at all, it occurred when the officers first approached Mr. Burton's vehicle. There really isn't any dispute that once they started asking questions and Mr. Burton started, you know, shifting around in his pockets and so forth, that there was a justification for detaining him.
Yeah, but his car is blocked at the outset by the officers and their bicycles, right?
That's correct, Your Honor. The officers approached on their bicycles on three sides of the vehicle.
Right. So the fact that he could have gotten out of the car and fled, is that sufficient to establish that he is free in a legal sense? In other words, what reasonable person would run out of his automobile at that point?
The problem I have with the appellant's argument, Your Honor, is that he seems to be arguing for a bright-line rule based on Pavelski, that whenever you're bounded on three sides by a law enforcement officer, you are seized for purposes of the Fourth Amendment. No matter,
well, that does sound pretty sensible.
No matter how briefly and no matter what else is going on.
What else could be going on? I mean, what else cognitively would you recognize going on if you've got three officers covering you?
Well, Your Honor, some things were not going on. For example, the officers were not brandishing their weapons.
Well, I don't know.
They were not shouting commands.
They don't have to brandish their weapons when they're surrounding the car. I don't understand you.
Your Honor, I'm just trying to direct the court to the totality.
But it's irrelevant that they weren't brandishing their guns. Brandishing their guns, that would be pretty weird. Waving their guns around. No, they obviously stopped them.
Well,
unless you want to inhabit the same fictional world with Mr. Sonnenschein.
Well, Your Honor, far be it from me to
fiction.
Quarrel with either the Supreme Court or this court on that particular point, which would probably be the proper subject of a law review article. I happen to agree with you. There is something odd about this reasonable person fiction. If an officer came up to me on the street and asked me my opinion of the weather, I personally probably would not feel free to leave. But when you look at the case law, I think it's fairly clear that officers can go much farther than that. And all I'm trying to say is that in this case, they didn't go nearly as far as they did in Pavelski and Packer, where they had several tons of police cruisers on all sides or three sides of the vehicle, or parking somebody into a driveway, which was one of the other cases, I think, Green.
What's the sum total of everything we've got up to the moment of the stop? We have the police there in uniform but on bikes because of an informant's tip that there's a drug house, so they're watching it. We have that.
Yes.
That by itself wouldn't justify stopping somebody on the street.
Your Honor, I think it's a close question. The the Assistant United States Attorney who handled this trial and briefed the appeal did not argue that the officers had reasonable suspicion. Neither the magistrate nor the district judge analyzed it that way. The state of the record is that the officers had an anonymous tip that people were parking in front of 3405 24th Street, I think, and walking across the yards in front of that property. And then, of course, you had Mr. Johnson with his arms in the vehicle leaning into the street. Candidly, the suppression hearing transcript is devoid of any sort of testimony about is that consistent with, you know, a drug deal.
Well, there wasn't probable cause, but I think what Judge Sykes is getting at, I would think this was a reasonable suspicion case. You know, some reason to think it's a drug count. And this fellow Johnson leaning into the driver's window while cars are swerving to avoid hitting him, sounds as if probably a transaction of some sort. It's in kind of in a dangerous position just to be chatting. So why wouldn't that suffice for the minimal stop?
Well, I'll go out on a limb and say that it does, Your Honor. There is some case law, and it doesn't come immediately to mind, that suggests that an uncorroborated tip by itself is not enough.
Well, we usually see that uncorroborated tip issue in a probable cause setting. But when we're just talking about reasonable suspicion, you have the uncorroborated tip, but you also have the peculiar behavior of Johnson. You put them together, you know, you have suspicion. Now, whether it's reasonable, arguable, but, you know, I don't think we don't require much in the way of reasonable suspicion.
There is one factual point that I would like to call to your attention on that issue of reasonable suspicion, and it has to do with the nature of the tip. The tip was not 3405 is a drug house. As shown on page 5 of the suppression hearing transcript, which is page 27 of the appellant's appendix, what they had was a handwritten note by a citizen that described people coming and parking in the front of the residence and also walking through the yards in an attempt to buy narcotics. So I think I just wanted to point that out for the court that maybe the zone of suspicion was a little larger than just that one address. And the reason I point that out, of course, is because Mr. Johnson came off of the porch at 3403 next door.
Does it matter if you've got three police officers on top of tanks or on top of tricycles? I mean, does it matter what the conveyance is, or dogs or horses or whatever? It's the police officers, isn't it? It isn't the bicycle. It isn't the conveyance, right?
Well, I would suggest what may be even more important than the conveyance is the duration of the surrounding that occurred. In Packer and Pavelski, if I'm not mistaken, the cruisers parked. And here what you had was the officers coming up on all three sides. If you look at the transcript, I think it's on page 10, it's fairly clear that that was a kind of a fleeting moment, and that Officer Lopez, who approached from the front, was pretty quickly involved with the questioning of Johnson off to the front left driver's side.
Was Johnson's leaning into the car when the bicycles pulled up, or had he left?
Oh, I believe he was still leaning into the car.
So, in fact, isn't it true that as long as Johnson was leaning in the car, Burton was stopped, right? I mean, he couldn't drive off.
That would also
his head off with him, right? So
I think he had his engine running. The record is unclear as to whether there were cars parked in front or behind Mr. Burton's vehicle. There is a diagram attached as an exhibit, which is somewhere in the record, which doesn't indicate any cars were parked, but again, the record is not entirely clear.
But the point is that Burton was in his car, behind the wheel, stopped with Johnson leaning in the driver's side window, at the moment of the stop.
Exactly.
So
if before the officers even showed up.
Right. If the stop of Johnson was lawful, the stop of Burton was lawful. Because it was a stop of them together to check out what they were doing there together.
Well, that's an interesting point. I mean, it takes two to tango, I guess. It takes two to obstruct traffic. And it's pretty clear from the record that Mr. Johnson was doing that. The officers testified that they observed some cars swerving out of the way. And I think it would be reasonable to say that they were both involved in that traffic offense.
Okay.
Unless the panel has any further questions, I'll rest on the government's brief and ask that you affirm.
Thank you, Mr. Cohen.
Thank you.
Mr. Sonnenschein, your time has expired, but you can have another minute if you'd like.
Thank you. Very quickly, on reasonable suspicion and the tip, I argued at pages 28 to 31 of my opening brief that it was insufficient under Florida versus JL, the Supreme Court's decision. The government conceded at pages 16 and 17 of its response brief that it was not sufficient, so they waived any argument on that.
I don't know what significance waiver has in a case like this. If we were convinced that this was a lawful stop, would we let this fellow walk, so to speak, because there was a waiver by the government? I mean, this isn't like an ordinary civil case, right?
Well, I'm not. I don't know how to answer that question, Your Honor. But I will say that the even if you don't take the government's concession for the reasons I've set forth at pages 28 to 31, this clearly is insufficient under Florida versus
well,
JL.
Well, what about the point that Judge Sykes brought out? So here's Johnson leaning into this window, and as long as he's got his head stuck in the car, Burton is stopped, right? He can't drive off, take Johnson's head with him, right? So that's a stop. So if the police just pull up at that moment, there's no incremental stop. He's stopped until Johnson gets out of the way, right?
Well, the point of a stop is not it's what the officers are doing to someone. It's not what.
No, I don't understand that. What if he's got four flat tires?
Well,
and the police pull up in front of him. They're not stopping him, right? He's stopped by something else. So what if he's stopped by Johnson? What if Johnson leans in and he gets his head caught? So Burton can't drive away. And then the police come up and surround the car. He's stopped until Johnson gets his head free, right?
But what happened here is the officers surrounded the vehicle, conveying to Mr. Burton.
So where's Johnson while this is going on?
His forearms, are, according to the record, are leaning on.
Right. So as long as he's touching the car, Burton can't drive away. So Johnson has stopped the car, not the police.
Johnson is leaning on the car.
That's a stop.
But if the police,
right?
If the police would like to,
it doesn't matter. The point is, the car is stopped. Could be stopped by flat tires. Could be stopped by Johnson leaning on the car. As long as Johnson is touching the car, Burton can't stop. Burton can't move. Right.
But Burton can move after the officers talk to Mr. Johnson and say, "We're stopping you for traffic obstruction. We want to talk to you about your traffic obstruction." At that point, Mr. Burton would have been free to go.
Well, he's a witness. He's a witness, though. He can't go until the police are finished.
He's a witness to this traffic obstruction?
Of course. Of course.
I'm sorry. I just don't agree with that. I don't know why.
Why don't you agree with that? He is a witness to Johnson's obstruction of traffic.
Well, for starters, right. It's hard to see how someone whose head is leaning into a vehicle is obstructing traffic.
Well, I don't understand that. It depends where the traffic is. Apparently, cars had to swerve to avoid hitting Johnson.
Well, that's difficult to believe under the circumstances because the car is parked legally and not.
Well, I don't understand. I thought it was common ground that the cars were swerving around Johnson.
That is what the record indicates.
Right, okay, they're swerving around, so he's obstructing traffic. Burton is a witness. Police can certainly question a witness.
This traffic violation was totally independent. The traffic obstruction does not take two to tango. Mr. Burton was not ticketed for traffic obstruction. There was no basis for ticketing him because his car was parked legally. And there, I don't.
No,
there
it's
is
Johnson
no
who's obstructing traffic.
Correct. Mr. Johnson
Burton
is
a witness to this obstruction.
Police, I am not aware of any authority that says police can detain a citizen who hasn't done anything wrong to interview him about what
You're
another
kidding.
Person has done.
You're kidding.
Police can stop you for
They can
anything.
Put you in jail as a material witness.
Right, but if they stop you, then it's a seizure, and it has to be justified.
Yeah, but if they're seizing you as a witness, that's fine, right? Stopped as
they
a witness.
Would need reasonable suspicion to seize
no, no,
you.
No, not a witness. What are you talking about?
I'm not aware of any authority.
You don't think police can stop a person who is a witness to crime and ask him questions? You know the Lidster case? Do you know Illinois versus Lidster?
I'm not familiar
Dragna
with that decision.
Case? Well, the police were investigating a hit-and-run accident, so they decided to set up a roadblock. Not for the hit-and-run driver, he'd left a week ago, but they thought that the people who commuted on his route might have information about the hit-and-run accident. So they stop all a bunch of people, ask them questions. Supreme Court said that was fine. They were stopping witnesses, people with valuable information. So I assume that we'd all take for granted that if you're a witness, the police can ask and question you, and if you try to run away, they can arrest you and hold you as a material witness.
Well, okay, but if the police have stopped him, this clearly isn't a consensual encounter.
Excuse me?
This clearly can't be a consensual encounter if in fact, he has been stopped.
No, but it's
stopped.
Lawful. It's lawful to stop a witness who has information about a crime and question him. And if he doesn't want to be stopped, then you haul him off and put him in jail as a material witness.
But the record doesn't indicate that these officers detained him for the purpose of questioning him regarding this purported traffic obstruction violation.
No, but our cases say that if police have a ground for stopping a person, if there is a ground, the fact that they don't know the ground doesn't matter. Right? All you have to be able to do is posit a lawful ground for a stop. They don't have to. It doesn't have to have been the ground that they were acting on. Well, enough of that.
Okay.
Okay, so thank you very much.
Well, thank
and
you,
and
Your
you
Honor.
Appointed,
thank you for your time.
We're appointed, so we appreciate your excellent efforts on behalf of your client.
Thank you.